Okay, everyone, welcome back. This is the policy development work team meeting of the PPSC, the Policy Process Steering Committee. And so we're going to do a deep dive into some of the issues that we talked about at the full meeting of the PPSC. Is there any way we can shut the door?
Yeah.
Sorry. Thanks. First thing I want to do is that we did a survey. I guess we're pulling up the Adobe Connect as well if there's anyone that wants to join that room. We did a survey of the we're on the planning and initiation phase, which is phase A, talking about those subjects, and we did a survey on the different outcomes and the things that we've been talking about. And so we're going to display the results of the survey. There were, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, there were 12 people that responded.
I think you made it 11 because one didn't fill in.
Okay, so there was 11, and which is pretty good because the work team is only 12 or 13, 14 people maybe. So
I think they're more about active participants.
Okay, so pretty good participation on that survey. I did not fill one out as the chair, just to try to keep a more neutral view on things. So I just want to go over the results first, and I think the results are pretty indicative of helping us to move forward. And maybe Marika's got the hard copy of the results so we can actually go over the numbers, because right here they're kind of pie charts. So the first question we asked everyone of the outcome that we came up with is the current status in which an issues report can be requested by the ICANN board, GNSO council, or an ICANN advisory committee. Should that be maintained? In other words, should there be other parties that be able to introduce, or should we change it in any way? And I think you'll see that the vast majority had said that they view that those are the appropriate three parties to make a request for an issues report.
If I just may, because I mean, on several of these questions, comments were added. I mean, after this meeting, I need to pull all the data together and then publish a more comprehensive report. But isn't it just to get an idea of you know, where the group feels along similar lines and where there's disagreement? And also maybe just to preface the reason for the survey, you know, this is not a vote or, you know, final decision on what the final outcome on these issues is going to be, but this was really a way of trying to, you know, feel the temperature of the group, especially since we had, you know, difficulties in getting participation from time to time, and as well give people an opportunity to, you know, fill in some ideas or suggestions that they have on these different issues. And just to add on this point, I think there was, you know, 8 people said yes, 2 said no, 1 expressed no opinion. I think one person that responded a no basically indicated that, of course, in the new GNSO, you won't have the GNSO council making the request, but it's then the two houses, or there's this new voting threshold, so that's something that might need changing. So that was one of the comments made. Another comment was received saying that there should be an increased threshold of support. They said that this will help reduce the preponderance of narrow issues. One thought would be to consider that the council or board can initiate a report alone, but other SOACs must have the support of other SOACs or work in conjunction with the council or board. And someone else suggested that there should be some possibility for groups of actors to be determined who those should be, to submit rather than request an issues report in a predetermined format that should be explored in order to make this initial exploratory step more bottom-up. So those are some of the other comments received in relation to this question.
Okay, so let's actually, I want to take the first comment that you had raised, or that was raised, which is on the bicameral, the fact that there'll be two houses. And I think the assumption was that there's still a council, and the council would still vote on things. The council still would initiate an issues report. Maybe there's different thresholds with it, but the council would still come to a vote and initiate the process, even though there's two houses. And Alan's shaking his head, so do you want to add?
Yeah, it's still the council making decisions. The thresholds require a specific threshold on each side of the house, on each side of the council, to have the council make the decision, but it's still the council deciding. It's just the detailed rules of the voting have changed.
Yeah, I don't know if that person maybe meant, because I think it can be, I don't know the exact numbers, but isn't it one house or two houses certain percentage or one house, basically indicating that if one house would request an issues report and vote in favor in it, even if, I mean, technically, of course, it's still the council, but maybe that was what that person had in mind, but not trying to put words
in. That was in support of the previous one, which said you only need 33% of the entire council or something. Right. So it always could have been done by a small, by a minority of the council with full objections on the other side, on the contracted parties or the non-contracted parties, and could still be initiated. And this just maintains the relatively low threshold for initiating a PDP, which I think was there.
It happened
before my time, but I think was there to allow a PDP to go forward even though one of the parties disagreed and didn't want to see it done.
Right, so the point is the council's still acting. And so I think the wording is still correct. It's still the council initiating it, and the voting thresholds are what they are. So if we want to move, and one that was no opinion, did they just not respond to anything? Or
no, I mean, I think a no opinion should be interpreted as no. I mean, that's how we phrase it, I think, in the other questions. And here, I think it was just no opinion, but it's no strong view either way.
Okay. And by the way, this survey is still open for anyone that hasn't done it yet. And so I encourage... Marika can resend out the link again.
Yeah, it was sent a number of times last week.
But she can send it again.
I'll send it again.
Last week was a bad week.
Yeah, so it went out.
11 responses, and just for the record, staff filled in, Margie, Liz, and myself completed one response as well on behalf of staff. Yeah, I have the...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can everyone use a microphone when they're speaking because it's being transcribed? I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, are there
This is Tim. I was just asking if, how many responded and if there were any demographics on that. And I'm sorry I came in a little bit late if I missed that.
But. Yeah, I'm happy to go through the list if no one objects. But, I mean, I presume everyone that stated his opinion here is
I think you can go through the list of people that responded.
Yeah?
Sure.
So responses were received from Wolf Ulrich Knoben from the ISPCP constituency, James Bredel, GoDaddy, Registrar constituency, Liz Williams, BC, Zibnik Lubel from the IPC, Greg Ruth from the ISPCP constituency, Avery Doria, NCA, Chair of the Genus O Council, Bertrand de la Chapelle from the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the GAC, J. Scott Evans, IPC, Paul Diaz, Network Solutions and Registrar constituency, Mike Rodenbach, Business constituency, and then Margie Liz and myself on behalf of ICANN staff. So those were the responses received to date.
Okay. Can you just use the mic? Sorry.
I'm sorry. So the question was, did Marika and Margie, you guys did the surveys that are in these results?
Yes, but we just did one for staff. So we didn't fill in three. We just did one.
Didn't stuff the ballot box.
Yes. Didn't want to tip the balance.
So, I mean, compared to the membership of the PDP team, I think it was a pretty good turnout. So that was good. There's still a couple more people that need to do it, and we look forward to their opinion. So this is just, again, it's just to test the waters to see where we're at on the issues that we've been discussing. So on number two, which is, you might have jumped.
Sorry.
Number two, which related to the procedures for requesting an issues report, we had a question on there. The reference to the initiation of a PDP with a request of an issues report should be removed from the bylaws, as the initiation of a PDP does not start with the request of an issues report. And the answer that we got back, the numbers were...
I just gave the page away, but I think it's the
same thing.
Probably the same. Let me just... Sorry. So it was 8 in favor, 1 no, and 2 no strong view either way. Some of the comments received were the first one, well, why not reword it to initiation of a PDP process? This process can be cut short with a no vote on step 2, but the issues report is an integral part of the PDP process. I presume this is from the person who said no. Second comments received saying, actually, it could be possible to make only a mention of the existence of a policy development process in the bylaws and describe it in more detail in a separate document. In addition, suggestion was made to have two documents in initial stage, an issues paper and a staff recommendation regarding the actual launch of a PDP. And a third comment was made saying, if the referent was removed from the bylaws, I assume this working group will recommend replacement text that more accurately describes the process to launch some desired policy work.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions or comments on that? Alan?
Just a quick one. I think the real issue is not to use the same identical phrase to refer to several different stages in the process. So whatever we come out with should be clear and not confusing.
Correct. I think
whether what the first stage or the second stage is the one that initiates is rather moot, as long as we don't use the same term twice.
Yep. Okay, the third question is, are the procedures outlined in the bylaws still relevant and efficient? And I think, you know, it's looking at the pie chart.
Yeah, strongly divided crowd. Three yes, four no, and four no strong opinion. There were six comments received because, as well, the question was asked, and if you answered no, how should the procedures be updated? So first comment was, the procedures are still relevant. Their efficiency is strongly correlated with the management capabilities of the relevant working teams. Second comment stated that a request for an issues report should be accompanied by some explanation of the need for the same. The timings need to be changed. The voting of creating a task force should be changed to a vote on creating a charter. For the most part, yes, but not as written. And then they list the issues that are currently in there. So third comment states that the main evolution is the move towards a working group model and a better community-wide interaction during the early phases of the issue scoping and goal setting. That must happen before the actual PDP is launched. The fifth comment states that at a minimum, the timelines need to be updated. What's the point of deadlines if they are never met? Never in capitals. more information needs to be provided at the time of the requests. And the last comment states that clarification might be needed on how to whom a request needs to be submitted.
So I think of this one, the actual comments are much more helpful than the question, you know, the yes or no,
yeah.
Which is good, which is fine, too. Going on to the next one. This was, there are no requirements as to what information a request should contain. Would a template be helpful, including items such as definition of issue, identification of problems, supporting evidence, why should the issue be considered for policy development? And I think the results were pretty strong in favor of some sort of template. And can you just go over the comments?
So 10 stated yes, one person stated no. The comments received were, it could help as a guideline for creating a request, but I have some doubts whether all kinds of requests could be pressed in a formal template. A template can include recommended data sources or subject matter experts and could help define rather than restrict the issues under study. Template can also reference any existing policies that are relevant. Another comment stated that yes, but a template information required should be flexible. One size does not fit all. Generally, templates mean one size fits all, and if you better fill in every blank, even if it's irrelevant. I tend to think that a set of guidelines of things to be considered might be useful, but would avoid anything as bureaucratic as a template. And the last comment received stated, definitely a major improvement.
So I think one of the things that we meant by a template in our discussions was not necessarily that every field needed to be filled out, but it was a template that contained the fields that others would consider helpful to know that information if you had that at the time the request was made. I think that's kind of the tones of the discussion, and so even the person, I guess, who sounded like voted no might be okay with that. But if anyone's got any comments in this room.
Yeah, the next question actually goes into the mandatory nature or
right.
of such a template. So
okay.
Maybe we should take that one together.
Okay, so if you answered yes to the previous question about templates, are you of the opinion that the completion of a template should be a mandatory step in requesting an issues report? And this one was a little bit more divided as between the yeses and noes.
So actually 7 said yes, 4 said no, but additional comments were submitted here as well, saying it shouldn't be a precondition for accepting the request. Mostly yes, but this should not be a barrier to good faith efforts to initiate a report. So a subsection of mandatory information must be submitted, with other more detailed information considered optional. Second person said, but this should not become an excessive preliminary exercise where requesting an issues report. I would prefer requesting a preliminary inquiry. It becomes a process in itself, adding to the vast amount of paperwork. Third person said, the template should be very concise. Another person refers to a previous comment that they made. It must retain flexibility and not impose rigid requirements as to format or content.
Okay. Anyone with questions on that? Okay, jumping right along to the next one. It's a pretty strong one here. Is requesting an issues report the same as initiating the PDP? And I think this is, the answer is pretty, we had a number of these discussions, and so the answer no here reflects really what we thought it would reflect, which is no, that there is a distinction between requesting the initiation report, I'm sorry, requesting the issues report, initiating a PD, and initiating a PDP. And so obviously when we rewrite this, there needs to be a clear distinction of what it means in both cases. And so we've had a lot of discussions on this issue in the calls. I don't know if this is worth talking about now, if anyone's got any questions, but I think at least to the members that have been participating, it's pretty clear. Okay.
So, I mean, the comments, yeah, there were 10 no, one stated no opinion. Some stated that, to my understanding, the issues report is the basis for initiating a PDP. Please advise if I'm wrong. Some name it a tricky word game. It is the same as initiating the PDP process and should be part of the defined process. How else do ACs have the ability to force consideration of an issue if the issues report is not a bylaws mandated part of the PDP process? Whether it is part of the PDP per se seems to be an academic semantic differentiation. Some said no, but it amounts to requesting a preliminary inquiry. The whole process should lower the barriers to entry in the agenda setting to let issues emerge early with the possibility of easily dismissing abusive requests. And another person said that if the requester cannot fully define the issue and provide credible supporting evidence, further policy work may be needed before a full-blown PDP can be initiated.
Okay. If you answered no, which is interesting because I don't think... Oh, I'm sorry. If you asked, yes. If you answered no to the previous question, which is everybody, should advisory committees be allowed to initiate a PDP? Now, this discussion comes in light of our calls in which the current bylaws state that an advisory committee could initiate the PDP whether or not... It doesn't. I'm confusing this in a sec. Current bylaws say that the advisory committees can request an issues report, but it would still go to the council after for a decision as to whether a PDP would be launched. Am I getting that right? Alan's looking at me here.
The current bylaws, if I remember correctly, use the term initiate a PDP at least two and possibly three different points in time.
Right.
We need to be clear whether requesting the issues report is initiating the PDP or initiating the process associated with ICANN policy development in the GTLD environment. We should use a different set of words. I mean, right now, I think that answer, the large answer no, is the advisory committee should not be allowed to initiate the creation of a working group to discuss consensus policy, I think is what that answer is no to, and not reversing the very first question of should advisory committees be allowed to initiate an issues report.
I
think we have a nomenclature problem here, and until we fix it, we're going to continue being confused.
Well, in a couple of the calls that we had talked about, and you're right, we do need to fix the nomenclature, but we had talked about initiating the PDP was synonymous with the working group, the creation of a working group, as opposed to initiating the policy process, which is the issues report and everything prior to that. So this question was meant to get at, should advisory committees be allowed to initiate the process of getting a working group together, surpassing the council council vote on that. And I think, so what were the comments that I received?
Yeah,
and the comments may be indicative of the language.
Yeah, I think the comments were, along the lines that we've discussed now, basically saying that the ACs can trigger the initiation of a PDP by requesting and cooperating on an issues report. Another one said, not alone, they should work with the GNSO council and our board. Third person said, again, word games, they should be able to initiate a PD process. If this is the PDP or pre-PDP or just the first step in a provisional PDP that can be determined. Oh, sorry. After this first step, I believe, is a semantic detail. And the last person said, this question is ambiguous. If it means that ACs have the right to submit a request for the preliminary stage, the answer is, of course, yes. If it means that an AC should have the right to order the launch of a formal PDP, like the board currently does, this is an issue to be discussed. There are pros and cons. but it's certainly worth considering.
I think that last comment sums up pretty well. Bertrand?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Which was actually my comment. So.
So much for anonymous.
No, anyway, the point, and I fully support what Alan and you were saying, the ambiguity in particular here is initiate. It's very interesting because initiate both means starting the initial phase, but also initiate is like ignite somehow. Like, if this question means, does an AC have the right to say, I ask for it, so you go, whatever the council says, I think obviously the answer should be no. But if it is, as Alan said, the right to request that it is initiated, that the initial phase is launched, the answer is probably yes. So,
okay. Moving on, should more details be provided on how an advisory committee can request an issues report? Currently, the bylaws don't have any details as to how this request is should be made. All it says is that advisory committee can request an issues report. And so here it looks like we probably had, let me guess, like 8-3-1 or something, or 8-2?
Yeah, 8-2-1. You're getting the hang of it. So some of the comments received were the bylaws or rules of procedure should clearly outline how the request should be processed. A flowchart would be very helpful. Another person said that an explanation, a flexible template should be required, but not in the bylaws. A guideline to considerations might be useful. The objective is to have very concise formulations in the bylaws and possibly annexed working methods. Excessive precisions creates documents that are hard to understand. It probably wouldn't hurt to have a staff advisory that explains the process ACs have used in the past to request an issues report, example with the support of GNSO councillors. I'm not convinced this needs to be enshrined in the bylaws, though.
Okay, the last comment is interesting because I don't think we said in the bylaws, but I guess people read that into the question. Okay. In theory, I think this is missing a couple words here.
I'll read the question. In theory, there is currently no limit on the issues that can be raised as there's no requirement for the issue to be within scope, i.e. within ICANN's mission and linked to GTLDs. This assessment is carried out as part of the issues report. Should an initial assessment take place when an issue is raised? So 6 said yes, 3 said no, 2 said no strong view either way. Some of the comments received stated that, assuming you mean doing this in the issues report, in line with the above comments, the objective is to lower the bar for raising an issue, i.e. a very bottom-up agenda setting, but have simple modalities to dismiss abusive requests should a topic be out of scope. Some independent process, not only ICANN's legal counsel, should provide an appeal mechanism in case of dispute regarding the scope. And the second comment reads, requesters need to be encouraged to submit issues that are narrow and defined so the scope determination can be made.
Any questions on this one? I see Marilyn and then Philip.
Jeff, I apologize for being out of the room earlier. I had an unfortunate conflict, but I just want to catch up on this point. The topic that I want to ask is, you know, let's say that an item comes up that actually will involve not a single SO, but multiple SOs. If there's no way to raise it within the supporting organization, and I, you know, I could think of it's a security and stability issue, and will affect both CCs and GTLDs. So if there's no way to raise it in the policy council, there would be, I think, no way to even initiate the cross-SO conversation.
You're talking about raising...
So if we don't allow an issue to come forward for at least discussion...
I think this question is, should there be an assessment as to whether it's in scope or not during...
I know.
Yeah.
That's,
but it's not necessarily saying that the issue shouldn't be brought forward.
I think where the issue came from, because currently that assessment is only carried out as part of the issues report, so whether it's within ICANN's mission or...
Okay.
And indeed the question was related, and I think Marin is basically asking another question, how do you... Well, maybe related, but if the GNSO Council can only look at or address issues that are within ICANN's mission and just only linked to GTLDs, how can you then get issues on the agenda that are not only linked to GTLD? Okay.
Yeah. Can I?
Okay. Yeah, Margie.
And I don't think that the scope issue is that narrow. If in your example, if it had no applicability to GTLDs, then you're right. But if it has applicability to CCTLDs and GTLDs, then I think it's still within GNSO scope. So that's how I look at that.
Okay. Philip was next.
Thanks. It's very interesting you've done this survey, I think, because it just exposes misunderstanding of the original intent of our current policy development process. And I think at least understanding where there is misconception is very useful. But if we look at certainly what the intent was in the policy development process, which is pretty well captured by its current writing, it's fairly clear. The idea was that, you know, there were three groups for whom it makes sense, the board, council, and advisory committees, who might have some sort of idea, however wacky it may be, that here is something that council should address. And the idea was that that should be able to be raised at a fairly low bar. And then you have this process called the issues report, whereby it is duly assessed as to whether or not it goes any further, and that's exactly where the scope issue hits. And the point of that process was that it may not be clear to the people first thinking that it's a possible issue as to precisely whether or not it's in scope, etc. And expertise about that must rest with staff to do that evaluation. So that was the nature of the issues report. Now, I think what has happened over time is that the nature and complexity of the issues reports as interpreted by staff has perhaps been wider than the thinking of those who originally constructed the PDP. And if that's the case, I think it's a question of how we look at the implementation of the issues report, maybe staging it in terms of the scope issues can be up front as a sort of a first pass and go no further if that's, you know, if it's out of scope. But I mean, the main construct behind it, which is it something we might need to talk about, and now we do a good check, I think is a very strong part of the existing PDP and a very useful part of it that we want to lose.
Did you? I don't know if we read the comments on this question. Did you want to read some of them, or I can't remember if we did on this one.
I think we already did.
We did on this one.
I think so.
Okay. Sorry, just forgetting. So then the next question is, should the requester identify the desired goal or outcome of a PDP? And again, this was the relation of whether it should be something that's a consensus policy or best practices or policy framework or any of those items. And do you want to go over that?
Yeah, it's 722, and there were quite some comments in relation to this one. First person saying, possibly, if this can be done without biasing the participants of the working group, and it could identify desired outcomes that are beyond ICANN's remit and are impractical to implement. Second one says, and define what problem a PDP is designed to resolve. Third one says, yes, to the extent that it can be determined. Sometime it might just be there is an issue here that needs to be looked at. Fourth person says, yes, but this should not be binding. The purpose is to help actors evaluate what is the expected amplitude of the issue. in that respect, a clear typology of outcomes, guidelines, consensus policy, decision, and general policy are four possible categories would be helpful. And a last comment stated, requesters should be encouraged to identify their desired goal outcome. Otherwise, the community could be overburdened with multiple policy initiatives that barely meet the threshold requirements to get started, but don't have widespread support and will be seen as a waste of time.
Any questions or comments on that? Alan?
I find that one quite interesting, actually, because on the last issues report I did, we included expect or hope outcomes, and were severely criticized by a whole bunch of people to say that's not in a request for an issues report. You're not supposed to be predicting the results. And yet I found in the discussions, it focused a lot of the discussions on what the issues were and to understand what the problem was. So I like that outcome.
Yep, I'm sorry, Mike.
But I mean, for me, it's you are really prejudging what the outcome should be if you're doing that. I mean, bottom line is we always have a range of potential outcomes that there can be, from consensus policy to best practices to whatever. We've outlined them before, and we have a beautiful slide, I think, with them. So that answer should always be the same to that question. And you shouldn't prejudge which one until the working group has done its job.
Okay, I see Marilyn makes a face as she wants to say something.
I want to see if I understand this. If you're requesting an issues report, that is probably because you've done a lot of research on an issue, you're affected by an issue. So I'm not sure that I understand why you would not have the option of identifying the desired goal. I would also, however, assume that this is the requester. This is not the person who drafts the issues report. So I think there's a difference here between I request an issues report, and I'll go back to an issues report that I requested many, many years ago on transfers. And clearly, there had been a there was a cross discussion between competitive registrars and the business community and ISPs, and the desired goal was an established transfers policy, which was clear and articulated and had recourse. Now, that's not to say that the issues report identified that, but the request and the justification for moving ahead with an issues report, I would think, does have to identify what the desired goal is. The issues report is supposed to be neutral, but I think that's different than the request. So I'm kind of feeling like I don't understand why the request would not identify a desired goal. Not to say that the council approves that as a goal.
Okay. I know I saw... Okay, Alan, and then Mike. And Tim, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, just continuing on. So I should have been more clear. I'm not saying that they should be discouraged from doing it. I'm saying that it should not be required. Because, for example, with the Fast Flux working group, when I got that issues report going, request going, I mean, I really had no idea how it ought to come out. I just knew it was a big problem that probably was within scope of ICANN's mission to address, and was able at least to convince enough counselors of that we got it going. But honestly, had no idea how it should have come out at that time.
Okay, and let me go to Tim and then Alan. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and I think too it depends on how you define goal. I mean, if you're going to say, well, we want to issue a report on transfers, I mean that's pretty difficult to deal with. I mean, what's the problem statement? What is it that you're trying to solve? So I think just in the request for the report, defining what you see as a problem or what the issue is in itself implies that there's some goal. The goal is to fix the issue. And so I think that, you know, in a broader sense, you know, a goal should always be a part of it. Whether or not there should be detailed response about how that issue or how that problem should be solved is a different question. And I can see where, you know, there might be cases where that could be included. but it wouldn't necessarily have to be. But I think just properly framed statement or a properly framed request for an issues report would in itself imply some goal. If it doesn't, then it's very difficult to act on.
Okay. Alan?
I support what the last two statements were. I don't think this should be required. There are certainly going to be issues where you know there's a problem and you know we need a lot of discussion and investigation, but you can't predict what the outcome is. There are others where the requester can predict an acceptable outcome that would satisfy them. That may not be what comes out of the PDP. If we look at the domain tasting one, what came out was not what we envisioned when we went into it, but I think most parties were happy with it. And that's fine. That's what the process is about. But if you do have some projected outcomes, then that helps to focus on what the problem is. And I think we certainly shouldn't forbid it.
Okay, Bertrand?
Yeah, I'd like to chime in with the a term that had been used previously and in one of the questions, which is flexibility. Because the key question is, how aware are people of the actual issue, the dimensions of the issue, the proper solution, or so before launching this whole process? The initial part is actually a cleaning of the issue. If, in general terms, the community is very aware that there is a problem, if the basic assumptions are relatively well known, then the initial part will focus on what is the expected time frame, is there an urgency or of sorts, how are we going to compose the working group, and basically do we agree on the goal, like what is the policy that should come out of it. If, on the other hand, it is a very tricky issue, people are not very aware that it's important, it's obvious that the initial phase will focus much more on additional information, issue scoping. And so in one case, it's possible to go very far in the request, saying basically, based on what we know, it's likely that the solution might be this, but it's not binding, and it's certainly not a necessary part of the request. On other cases, people will say, we sense there is a problem here, and the initial phase should highlight the problem and what should be done about it, and whether it should be addressed at all or not. So flexibility in here is the main criteria, with at the same time the desire to go as fast as possible when a certain number of previous elements have been cleared before.
Okay. Any comments on it? This is James back there has got a comment.
Is that on?
It is.
Okay. And forgive me, I don't know if I fell into the purple or not, but it may have been a question of me not reading the language of this particular survey item correctly. But just to kind of build on what Mike was saying, I also had the FastFlux working group experience in mind when this came up, and I was thinking that if a requester identifies a goal early on, a lot of folks can join a working group, and that is kind of a first to occupy that particular issue, any sort of a stated goal, and it can have a lot of staying power, even if during the course of the working group's deliberations other legitimate uses come out or other types of, we find out the issue is much more complex, we keep circling back to this stated goal that was laid out initially, which may or may not have any relevance anymore to the outcome of the PDP. So it just seemed to be this kind of ball and chain around the work of the working group that maybe should have been separated earlier and moved on and could have sped up the entire process. So I think that I just wanted to get that for the purple.
Okay. Any comments on that? All right, jumping on to the next one.
Yeah, the next one was actually an open question, so I didn't put up here, but I can just quickly go through it if you don't mind.
All right, not too quick because they got to transcribe.
Yes, I'll try to be slow. The next question was, what actions are needed in order to ensure a precise and narrow definition of an issue? And nine people provided some input on that one. First one stated, providing issue-related information as comprehensive as possible, squeeze the initiator for providing information, set criteria against which you can question, understand the appropriate role of ICANN and organizations within the ICANN community in affecting an issue. early and frequent consultation between affected parties. I don't think we can prescribe this. It will vary from case to case. At the issues report level, policy staff should be able to ask clarifying questions. The question may not be narrow, may not be a narrow definition, but rather an agreed, concise formulation that encompasses the different dimensions of the issue. If it is the purpose of the very initial stages to help participants define issues of common concern or interest and agreed goals, i.e. the purpose of the PDP, in many cases the problem is not the absence of a narrow definition of the issue, but the lack of clarity regarding the different dimensions and the actual objective pursuit. And one person said, to be decided. There is no one-size-fits-all answer to this question, but it seems likely that a more robust definition will be developed if more than one vocal, persuasive council is driving the issue. There need not be a precise or narrow definition of an issue. And a last comment refers to workshops, templates, birds of a feather, and community discussion as examples.
So it's obviously an open-ended question, got a lot of different types of answers. I think it's helpful, though. And I'm glad that people responded with good substance. The next question we asked was, should an initial assessment be foreseen whether GNSO policy development is the appropriate response to an issue raised, or whether other alternatives are deemed more efficient to achieve the desired outcome? And this was pretty split between those that say yes or no opinion, or no strong view either way, or no. Actually, that's a bunch. So,
yeah, it was five yes, two no's, and four no strong view either way. And some of the comments stated, are there examples for alternatives? The assessment is just a recommendation. It might be useful as long as it's not binding on the council. The policy development process can actually cover a broad range of issues and outcomes. It is part of the initial assessment, i.e. preliminary phase, to verify collectively that the issue is indeed important, that there is an agreed goal, and the nature of the desired outcome. This should be reported in the staff-produced recommendation at the end of the preliminary phase. We should avoid multiplying ex-ante checks and base the process on the assumption that people will use it fairly. This may not need to be a requirement, but it seems folly to forge ahead with PDPs that are deemed largely out of scope by staff and don't have widespread support at the council level, i.e. fast flux. Better to develop more knowledge first and make a better informed decision whether the issue really lends itself to policy work. Policy development can have multiple outcomes, so it does not need to be restricted.
So one of the first comments to that I thought was interesting, and it was just a question. It says, are there other alternatives? So maybe we could talk about that for a second. Are there any other alternatives? There's an issue brought up, and the assessment is whether GNSO policy development is the appropriate response to the issue raised, or whether other alternatives are deemed more efficient. The question was, what are other alternatives? And do people have a thought on that, or what were they thinking when they were responding to this? So, Alan?
I haven't responded yet, so those aren't mine. But I think the answer to that depends on who it is that's doing the requesting. I mean, an advisory council has the ability to advise the board to do something. The board may, I guess, initiate a GNSO PDP at that point, but the GNSO itself has other mechanisms that it has used on occasion, writing letters to various bodies, the board or other groups. Are included. So I would have thought that that's almost a given, that whoever's initiating it is looking at what tools are at their disposal and deciding whether this is the right tool to use in this particular case or not. I sort of take it as a given.
Does anyone that responded to this want to have a comment for that? I mean, are there people that bring up an issue? I guess, Mike, you brought up the fast flux one. when you were initially assessing that problem and bringing it up, did you think that there were other vehicles within ICANN that you could have used as opposed to bringing it up through the GNSO, or?
Well, ESSAC had already issued an advisory at that point, so no.
Okay. Trying to draw out some conversation. So if it wasn't through GNSO, so it was your view that if it wasn't through GNSO, it wouldn't be handled at all, or that it was
easy to do? Well, it wouldn't be handled by ICANN at all. I mean, ESSAC had done their job. They came out and they said, this is a problem. They actually suggested that we do something about it, and so I acted on that.
Okay. And Tim?
The question was, should an initial assessment be foreseen? I guess I'm just trying to understand what was meant there. You know, who would do the assessment? Is that the requester foreseeing an assessment, or is that the GNSO or the staff, or?
I guess that would be the next question.
It's an interesting question. I think it in my mind it kind of relates back to the question about, you know, should there be an initial assessment of scope, you know, or with those kinds of things that I think help to inform the council as they're looking at these different issues from the ability to properly prioritize their work or to be able to, focus, look at the resources available, whatever it might be. So I think, you know, all that's valuable. But of course, you know, who's going to do that assessment, I guess, would be the question.
Right.
I would say just inherently, every councilor has to make that assessment when they decide how to vote. Every constituency has to make that assessment when they instruct their councilors how to vote. It's inherent in the process.
Okay. Philip?
I think actually this was a very interesting question to have asked. And in many other processes, I mean, when you're looking at doing work, you ask the same thing, are the different alternative ways of achieving the same outcome. It strikes me that, I mean, if we look at the existing content of an issues report, there are five things which the staff manager is required at the moment to include within that. And it strikes me that maybe adding this the idea of a sixth, which would simply be, are there alternative means to achieving this, as a natural part of that process, which would simply be a no followed by two lines that this seems to be the only way, or a yes, and a paragraph to follow, would be a useful part of the issues report. Now, sometimes it's going to be easier to do than others, and if there's complexity, fine, that can just simply be indicated. We don't need to my mind, imply a lot of extra work to do that. But I think simply addressing the question as part of what you get back in the issues report would be quite useful. So it's asking the staff manager, to my mind, would be part of the way you would implement that if it's felt desirable. Personally, I do.
Okay, thank you, Philip. Anybody else with comments on that? Bertrand?
Yeah, just a quick comment. Actually, I think there was a remark by somebody regarding not multiplying the prerequisites or the preliminary evaluation before the preliminary evaluation and so on. I think what we're listing, all the discussions we have here and all the questions that we ask, are basically the equivalent of a checklist for the preliminary phase. And so it should be the things that should normally come into the discussion during the preliminary phase. Like, if there is anybody who thinks that there is another way to do this than a PDP, this should be part of the discussion. Like, hello, why don't we use another process? And so it should be recorded, taken into account in the issues paper or whatever. So I think what this question means is that it is part of the range of issues that have to be taken into account, rather than a separate process that is a sub part of a preliminary process to judge whether we should launch a PDP or not.
Okay, thank you. I think you're right. I think a lot of these topics have all come up in one way or another during our calls, and you know, we're trying to assess, you know, what the group's view is on these things. And you're right, what we're getting out of it is a checklist, or at least people's thoughts on the checklist. Again, not necessarily a required element to be filled in the checklist, but certainly helpful elements, or that some feel would be helpful to have. And so you're kind of following the questions right, I think.
If I may make an additional comment, we might have here an illustration of the distinction between the categories that I was that we were discussing before. Because the whole process is a framework. What we have here is the equivalent maybe of guidelines. This whole checklist is very close to the birds of a feather document that was presented. Like, it could be a document that is for the benefit of working group, of the initiators and managers of the initial process, saying basically when you discuss this issue, keep in mind the following list of questions to guide your discussion, period, which is very different from having it as a formal framework that says you need to have first a discussion and a decision and a vote within your group on question B/73C.
Right, and once we come out with the checklist, then we'll ask the question again as to whether the group feels any of these elements should be mandatory or none. You know, that's at the time that you could re-ask the same question. And the answer may be no, none of them should be. But we'll re-ask the question at that point. Anybody else with a comment on this one? Alan?
Just a very quick one. I think the wording a checklist, I think, is very helpful to give people who are new in this process. There's a lot of turnover in ICANN. And to give them an idea of what is expected and the questions they should be asking, I think, is very useful.
Okay. All right. The current requirements for the content of an issues report are predefined by the bylaws. Are the current elements still relevant? And this one, I saw Alan just shrug his shoulders. Maybe that's the general view of there was no strong view either way. It seemed to take the cake on this one. So the comments here would be helpful.
Yeah, so someone suggested that another template is necessary for this so it can be populated with relevant information, and a checklist for completion should also be included along with a proposed timeline. As indicated previously, there should be a distinction between initial issue papers, 2 to 3 pages, and staff-produced recommendations in a secretariat function regarding the launch of an actual PDP. The content of these documents is too precise a level of detail to be in the bylaws. And a last comment stated, it will depend on the outcome of the discussions regarding the pre-request phase.
Okay. Any questions on this one? Nope. Okay. Is an issues report still the desired outcome of the planning initiation phase? And the answer here was pretty strong.
Yeah, 8 yes, 1 no, and 2 no strong view either way. So some of the comments going with that. As mentioned above, the outcome of the initial preliminary phase should be a recommendation drafted by participants in the initial phase with the support of staff as secretariat that describes the next steps proposed and the rationale for it. Concision is key here, and the format should be somehow a draft resolution for the council to adopt as is, unless it objects according to an agreed procedure. Council should be a validator, not the decision shaper. A report is likely the outcome of the planning and initiation phase, but whether this is called an issues report and whether this is a staff-only report should be further discussed.
Any comments? Is the person who made the last comment, what was the, can you say that again? I'm just trying to digest that.
I think that was staff.
Oh, that was staff.
Basically, we feel that probably a report will still be the outcome of this phase that, you know, outlines different views, information found, findings of a workshop, you know, if there's a decision to have a public comment period or request the opinion of constituencies. We think that a report will still be the product that will be sent to the council for consideration, but whether we call that an issues report or whether it's only compiled by staff or by others, that seems to be still open for discussion. But I don't want to speak for the rest, but I do think that indeed some of the detail that is currently in the bylaws shouldn't be there and probably should be in a separate document, and again maybe have some kind of template for what kind of categories you might want to include. I mean, maybe the issue is the recommendation of staff. That might be a requirement that you leave in the bylaws, but some guidance might be helpful of what other kinds of information are deemed useful for the council to take an informed decision.
Okay, any questions or comments on that one? I see Alan's got a puzzled look.
I don't think it's a comment on this one, but it strikes me as we've been talking about it that the what we're calling the issues report is always we toss something over the wall at staff and 15 days later or 30 days later or the agreeable time they toss it back. And I've gotten the impression as we look at this more and more that there should be a little bit, we should allow enough time, and there should be perhaps a little bit of iteration in the process. Because there are cases where things just get missed and it's locked in the issues report forever and there's no opportunity to refine it.
Yeah.
And I think we need somewhere along the process some iteration to see a draft, at least to pass it back to the people who made the original request. Are we answering your question?
Yeah, and one thing that I would strongly advocate is indeed that there's an opportunity for the community not to maybe comment on the recommendations or, you know, challenge certain findings, but be able to make factual corrections. Because indeed, as you said, in 15 days it's a deadline, it gets published, and that's it. I mean, yes, we can put out, an updated version, but it would be really helpful if we can, put it out saying this is the preliminary report. Can you just check to make sure that we've covered all the information? Is there any key, information or data that we've missed, that we didn't see, that you think needs to be included, that indeed there's this possibility to say, okay, and here's the final one. We've made the correction. Not intended to be already a discussion on whether to initiate or how to address the issues, but just indeed the factual, is the information correct?
I think bottom line, between staff and volunteers, an immense amount of effort goes into the PDP process from its very early pre-initiation stages through whatever ends up coming out. And it would be nice if we had some level of comfort that's really addressing the issue that was raised. And I believe there are cases where that has not been the case because of things along the way.
Okay. Well, Bertrand, did you...
Yeah, I think there are two. The discussions on that issue were very interesting in the group, and indeed the question of the respective responsibilities of staff and whatever group can help draft the outcome is important. The second thing is during the discussion we raised the fact that there was probably a beginning and an end that could be formalized by different types of documents, and that the initial phase can be either very short, if it is a simple, very well-known issue that people really want to address quickly, or can be more lengthy if it is an issue that really has to be dealt with in detail. I think the main outcome of the discussion on the PDP was to highlight the incredible importance of preliminary stages. And my experience in the little time that I've spent in ICANN in the last 3 years is that there's a big danger in the rush into the process. Like, the preliminary stage is done very quickly and say, yeah, we need a PDP, and then bing, the whole shebang comes in and it lasts for ages, because in many cases, as mentioned before, the scoping of the issue or the understanding of what is at stake, and sometimes just the formulation of the problem, like working tirelessly at the beginning to formulate the problem in a way that encompasses all the interests of the different actors, is sometimes more important than 6 months of work later down the road. So I would highlight in this respect that the preliminary phase has two critical elements / dangers. The first one is the entry bar, which is the agenda setting, whether you can easily bring an issue in the more preliminary checks, the harder it is for an emerging issue to be coming up early enough. The second danger is closing it too quickly and rushing into the PDP. So flexibility in having additional discussion, maybe create an informal group to discuss the issue and help refine the report, is sometimes a good way to launch the PDP only when people are really ready to do it.
So let me ask a question of, I guess, Alan and Mike as being two of the people in this room that have requested the issues report. And without putting you on the spot too much, have there been instances where either of you have wanted more involvement in the issues report or have not necessarily been happy with the way the issues report came out?
Can I have that comment as
well? And then I'll turn it to staff to also comment to say whether they wish the two were involved. So is there any comments or thoughts you guys have on that? Or are you okay with the way the issues report turned out? So, Mike.
Well, I wasn't asked for help during the process. Had I been asked, I certainly would have given some, I'm sure. But then again, you know, if I get to help, then why shouldn't eight other people get to help in the process? So that becomes really unwieldy. Then you've got a drafting team. You don't have staff working on a report. So, but clearly, I was not happy with the way that issues report came out. But for another reason, it was because the staff, you know, made a firm recommendation that they didn't think a PDP should go forward at that time, that other work should go forward, and that created tension between staff and a subset of the council, a majority of the council members, actually, as I recall. That's another issue which we can talk about, which we'll talk about later. So I don't need to belabor that point, but.
Okay, let me go to Alan, and then I see Christina, and I want to hear Marika as well. So, Alan.
Well, I've only been involved in two, and one of them I think worked out just the way I was hoping, and the other one, there were some problems. And if we were to do it over again, I would do my best to try to make sure the outcome was a little bit different. So.
So what were the good things? I'll start with that. So when you say...
Well, the good things are the issues report, I think, addressed the question, confirmed that there was a problem, confirmed that there were a number of possible solutions. And, you know, that was the one on domain tasting.
Right.
The one on expiration domain recovery, there was one major problem with it. And I think if there had been some iteration, it would have been addressed properly. And because it wasn't... It remains to be seen just how successful the process is going to be.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll recover from that, but there are issues which should have been different.
Okay, let me go to Christina and then to Marika.
I just had a suggestion / request that I think would be helpful on several levels with regards to issues reports, and that would be for staff to prepare and include at the end just a list of, you know, references consulted or factual information relied upon. And I think that would accomplish several goals. First, it would help those reading the issues report understand, just to know what factual information staff had access to and what they relied upon, and to the extent that there may have been inadvertent omissions simply because staff didn't have access to particular information, that would be a way to highlight that. Second, I think it would allow people to understand in many cases how staff got to where they got to in terms of their recommendation. And finally, I think it would serve as a really useful starting point for if the issue then goes forward, whether it's to a working group or a drafting team or whatever, and there may be people who are interested in the issue but don't have the same factual background in it, this would be a really good kind of source list for them to go to so that they can get as up to speed as everybody else, so that when you start the work, everybody has the same basic factual underpinning, so you're not having to play catch up all the time, which I have found can really slow the process down.
Okay, let me go to Marika, and then I'll go back to Alan.
Yeah, no, just to comment on Christina's point, I think it's a really good idea. I mean, the only issue is that sometimes it's really difficult to actually find sources, and it often comes back to talking internally or getting experiences. And coming back as well to a point that Mike made, it's for us it's sometimes really a challenge indeed when we research or write the issues report, that we cannot go back to one person, ask questions, because we should do it then to everyone. So often, indeed, we operate in a silo and say, okay, well, that those questions will come at a later stage, because we don't want to be seen either as talking to one person for information and then not the other. So it's, you know, that's one of the challenges, and I think where we really see a need for more discussion and information at those beginning stages. And just to comment on, you know, the experiences with how the request for issues report have been received. I mean, you know, with the ALAC, that experience was really good, because they actually came to us before they submitted the request. So we actually had some time to try to understand what the issue actually was, and really try to get as much information as possible out of them before, you know, the request was actually submitted and the, you know, the clock started ticking. And that has been lacking on some of the other issues, where they were, you know, without us knowing, put into the council, voted upon, and here are your 15 days. And that has proven to be really difficult. So even though you're not completely happy with what was in the issues report, from a staff perspective, that was really helpful to try to understand what do you see as the issue, and, you know, trying to focus as well, so in the issues report, on digging into those specific questions. So.
Okay. Alan and then Bertrand.
One of the things that bothers me is, as we're having these discussions, we use expressions like, if the problem is well understood. And we're assuming ICANN is a monolithic organization where everyone has the same knowledge. And that's far from the truth. We can have issues that have been talked about at workshops and ad infinitum for the last 2 years. And there are people in the community, often very knowledgeable senior people in the community, who are oblivious to the issues because it hasn't been something they focused on. So ICANN is not monolithic. Issues can be very well understood, but still a complete new game for half the people on council.
Okay, let me go to Bertrand and then see if we can go through a couple other questions.
One precision on the comment that you just made. Did I understand correctly that in the current mechanism, when a request for an issues report is being made, the staff is not supposed to have interactions with people?
I don't think it's not an official rule, but we, you know, personally, I would view that as a way that some might say you're being influenced. If I would only talk to Jeff on a certain issue, but not to Alan, and the community would find out, it's very easy then to say, oh, yeah, but, you know, Jeff guided. I can see that here. There's no official rule, but... And anyway, the 15 days don't allow for much.
This is exactly the point I want to make. The mechanism I understand, and once again, I'm discovering things as I go along, so apologies for the naive questions sometimes. It really looks like what Alan was describing, like tossing an issue, then, oops, nobody talks to anybody. Make sure that nobody talks to anybody, and then wait until the staff, in his wisdom, brings the answer that, yes, of course, it's a very important issue, or no, it's not. I mean, this cannot work.
Well, no, so
I mean, excuse me, now I get the understanding why ICPDP is lasting for ages, because there's no interaction before the thing is launched.
So what I'm hearing is, just to kind of to summarize, what I'm hearing is that perhaps there should be some sort of, before the issues report is formally submitted to the council for a vote,
the request, even.
That there, well, at least at this stage, that there should be some, or there should be, there maybe should be some mechanism that where there should be a review by those that brought up the issue to make sure the issues report captures exactly what was intended to be captured before the council actually votes as to go, okay, a working group should be launched and develop your charter based on this issues report.
Yeah, because one of the suggestions that we've made as well in our paper is, for example, for staff to be able to, you know, put out specific questions as part of, you know, a bit of a short public comment period, so we can actually get the information we need, you know, to really do a comprehensive issues report, and have more work done indeed in workshops and discuss the issues with the community to get as much information as possible to really indeed allow the council to make an informed decision and not on, you know, sometimes limited 15-day. Phase in which you're trying to pull an issues report together, often on issues where there's very little public information available. So rely on, you know, experience from other staff members on these issues, you know, complaints that are being dealt with in compliance or services, just to, you know, try to build the issues report.
Okay, let me, I'll go to Philip and then Christina, and then we have to actually end it. So let me go to Philip and then Christina.
Thanks, Jeff. I presume you mentioned that the 15-day deadline is just historical interest, because one of the things we'll be looking at is to whether or not we want to amend that. I think it's a very interesting discussion, and I think it does underline some of the problems that's been there, and particularly hearing from staff the problems they're having in doing a staff task, I think, is very useful. I mean, for me, one thing I think can be achieved by combining what we heard earlier in terms of Christina's recommendation of, in terms of relevant sources, which to my mind would include, and why not, you know, and we had dialogue with, you know, this individual who was part of the group who made that request in the first place. That would be, to my mind, legitimate transparency in terms of explaining that. So that would help in terms of that interaction, and the report naturally has that transparency, so we know that discussion took place. And for me, it's an open question, which was the other suggestion I think we heard about whether or not there should be the sort of, you know, preliminary issues report and then a short comment period just to make sure it captured things. I mean, I'm not sure if that's necessary if you have the other part of it, but I'm, you know, open to it. But I think that's, you know, I think we're getting close, I think, to refining quite a good process, I think, as part of those suggestions we've heard so far.
Thanks, Philip. Christina?
Philip just asked my question.
There you go. And one last comment from Marika.
Yeah, one idea could be as well, when an issues report, a request for an issues report is received, it could be an option as well that staff actually comes back saying, yes, we can do this in 15 days, 30 days. No, we would strongly recommend that a workshop is held first because we feel there's not enough information available in the public domain, or we would like to run a public comment period to solicit contributions. So that might be a way as well to facilitate this need, in certain cases, for more information. I mean, in some, we've been able to do it in 15 days where there's clear information available and it's, you know, very narrowly defined issues, then, you know, it's sometimes possible.
Okay, well, I want to thank everyone. We're going to release this survey results to the entire
world.
Well, at least to the PPSC, the whole PPSC, including the two work teams, just so everyone can see the results. Everything's public anyway. I mean, people can see it on the wiki.
One question.
Yes.
Do we allow for, because I heard some actually didn't have a chance to fill it in. Do we?
Yeah, that was going to be my next. I think we should keep it open.
But then I cannot do the results yet. So.
That's a good point. Let's give a few more days to allow people, like, let's give another week. Or how long is it going to take you to compile the results?
Well, give them at least another week, because it probably won't happen before I get back from Sydney. So.
Right. So what I'm thinking is we have our regular biweekly call, so which would probably be two Thursdays from the end of this meeting. So hopefully by then we could have sent all the results to everyone out. Okay, so we'll do that. There are a couple questions we didn't discuss. Maybe we'll finish them up on the next call that we have as a team. But I think this has been very helpful to kind of create the checklist. And then we will get into topic B, which is the next phase. But I really want to thank everyone for filling out these forms and discussing. I think the discussions we've had here have been really helpful. And it's good to have so many people. So I really encourage those that are on the work team to maybe now that things will get a little bit less hectic, hopefully, is to join in a couple weeks on our next call. Anybody have any closing remarks, questions? Well, I want to thank everyone, and I will see everyone around. Thank you.
So get yourself lunch, the council members, and then we'll come back and talk about, we don't need scribing, so.